My wife won that.
This is the Planning Commission work session for Thursday, October
18th, 2018. Good evening, Planning Commissioners. For the recording, my name is Pat Herman, a planner with the Department of Community Planning, Buck County. Tonight I'll be presenting another urban holding removal release. Go over the agenda for my presentation during this work session. Describe urban holding generally, go over what we have previously done this year, the proposal that will be in front of you on November 15th, the process that it takes to remove an urban holding overlay on the zoning and comprehensive plan, and your schedule. So a lot of this is going to be an indication of what you heard previously. But in order to try to do a comprehensive overview, I want to reiterate some of these points. Urban holding is a tool that allows development to phase. It restricts premature development of the land when the infrastructure is not in place to serve that urban style of development. Specifically in the Vancouver urban growth area, the removal is through a type 4 process with your recommendation and county council approval. In the smaller cities, urban building is removed to get financing. Back in August, I spoke to you during the work session, and then on September 6th, you held a public hearing regarding the first phase for urban holding removal in the 179th area. This area included 40 acres known as the Three Creeks Phase 1 development. This was trips that the development obtained through a development agreement and was transferring to property that they acquired. And so those trips were able to transfer from one property to the other property. You recommended approval on September 6, 2018. That recommendation of approval is scheduled to go in front of the county council on December 18th in a public hearing. The proposal that you'll have in front of you on November 15th is the Mill Creek planned unit development. This planned unit development is approximately 143 acres. It is on the northwestern quadrant of the intersection of 179 and 50th Avenue. There are also two properties that are south of 179. Proposal here is shown in red. Currently, the zoning for that development is the R175 single-family residential zoning with the minimum lot square footage of 7,500. The proposal from the developer is to subdivide it for 606 single-family units that are detached and 99 townhomes. That total generation of traffic results in about 657 trips during the PM peak, or rush hour, as they call it, onto the system, onto the transportation system. I know this map here is kind of hard to see on the overview, but what you're generally looking at is the phasing that's planned, as well as green spaces and trail accommodations to develop this site. So as part of this urban holding removal and the development agreement that's being processed along with it, the developer is proposing financial contributions to three projects. Those financial contributions are in the form of traffic impact fees that are provided up front, And those traffic impact fees go toward projects that are identified in our capital facilities plan that you're familiar with in our comprehensive plan. The three projects specifically identified are 179 I-5 interchange replacement. This is actually not a county project. This is a washout project that is funded through Connecting Washington Transportation Bill that was approved by the legislature in 2016. The project 179 Delfell Road to 15th Avenue is improvements along 179 from the interchange to 15th Avenue. It includes widening, and I'll get into details about that. This is a county project just that the developer were to buy would go toward that improvement. 15th Avenue, this is the extension that you heard from last in phase one. This is a future extension of 15th Avenue from 179 to 10th Avenue. My next slides are going to go into details on those projects and how the development is proposing to provide financial contributions to that project. So as I go through each one of these projects, the reason why I'm showing them broken out is because when the developer submits their traffic impact analysis, they're showing what impacts are a direct result of their proposal. They're showing where constraints are on the system, what we have planned, and how their impacts will build capacity onto that system. So specifically for the interchange replacement project, the impacts that the development is showing are go toward the improvements for elimination of the existing 10th Avenue at 179. As you know, if you're driving northbound on I-5 and get off at the 179th interchange, as you come at the end of the off-ramp, you look directly onto 10th Avenue. This would eliminate that connection to separate the connection here from the on-ramp here. It would include a temporary extension of that 10th Avenue to curve over to about 12th Avenue so that it separates it from the on and off ramps, and then reconfiguration of that off-ramp. The other project that the development is impacting and that we are identifying is that 179th Street project. The developer's financial contributions would go toward the construction of a roundabout at 179th and 15th Avenue, widening of 179th between I-5 off-ramp and the new 12th Avenue roundabout, widening of 179th between those two roundabouts, and then termination of Union Road. Union Road is directly to the east of the northbound off-ramp. Termination of Union Road is necessary in order to facilitate turning movement saving times. The other financial contributions in detail are modification of the intersection at 15th Avenue and 179th in order to construct a westbound left turn. As you saw on the map, the project proposal is to the east of 15th Avenue. It's actually at the intersection of 50th Avenue. So for their trips that are headed westbound, they would need to construct a left turn lane onto 15th Avenue. So I talked about the financial contributions that they are proposing. Next, I'm going to talk about the mitigation that they're actually planning on constructing as part of their development. This would include a stop sign at each approach onto 50th Avenue. I can go back to that previously, but if you remember, there are several property lines that touch 79th. So in order to provide access on 179th, they have to install stop signs. Also left turn lanes on 179th in order to provide ingress for the proposed development would be necessary. And then the ability to install a left turn lane at 50th Avenue and 179th. This would be left turn going eastbound to northbound onto 50th. So as we dealt with the phase one, the criteria that you evaluate for lifting curb and holding are the five that you see in front of you. Most importantly is that bottom one, the completion of the localized critical links and intersection improvements that are reasonably funded as shown on the county's six-year TIP, Transportation Improvement Program, or through a development agreement. This proposal is using the instrument of a development agreement to fulfill that requirement. The development agreements that we are seeing in the queue right now are the following. Three of them have to do with the Three Creeks property that you saw previously. It included a 60,000 commercial square foot retail. This first one is on the intersection of 15th Avenue and 179th. This would be the southeastern quadrant of that intersection. The Three Creeks North Phase 1, which is the proposal that you reviewed in September, recommended approval for. Phase 2 is 179th Street to the south of 179th. As you remember, back in September, the requirement to transfer the trips so that Killian can develop Phase 1 mean that the Phase 2 179th has to wait for 5 years in order to transfer these trips. One that you are evaluating on November 15th is the whole Mill Plain, Mill Creek PUD venue of 606 homes and the townhomes that I discussed previously. And then the two other that are waiting are the Hinton property and the Lowell property. Hinton is south of 179th, around 29th Avenue. And then the Lowell property is on the western section of 179 to the west of I-5 at the intersection of 179 and northwest 11. The project schedule moving forward tonight, we're at the work session and we are scheduled for a hearing on the 15th of November at 6:30. With that, I'll take any questions if you have any.
Can you back to the first map where it showed where that development is? Yeah. So that's 50th, it's in line with 50th there? 50th and 179th?
It's 50th. 29th Avenue is here.
Okay.
179th.
Wow.
So, previously the urban holding removal at the Three Creeks was because of a trip transfer from property from one property to the other.
Right.
This one is the difference with this one is this is that pipeline project that we discussed previously and the phasing of urban holding removal throughout that.
Did we get a book on this?
No.
I don't think so.
You'll receive the recommendation from me the hearing, as well as the packet and all the useful information, all the comments, and necessary information in order for you guys to make your recommendation.
This applies to the various traffic mitigation measures that we should have. Okay. I think it was their actions specifically one. Okay.
There, right there.
The last bullet point. Yeah. If the North East 50th Avenue provides sufficient width, so if it doesn't provide sufficient width,
they'd have to dedicate. Or obtain it.
Yes.
I think
is the one that goes to the university.
Yes. If you turn
What's that? Well, I mean, it just kind of seems like we're starting to bite the apple now. I mean, it's coming.
No, I know.
The question is, that's a lot there. Yeah. That's why I asked for the book. I would like to read it, kind of ponder it. Send us as much as you can prior to the hearing.
I promise I will.
That just is helpful. You know, it's read.
I know this is a lot to absorb.
So this is kind of the beginning of this process. So is that fair to say? I mean,
yeah.
We're starting to walk down the, what are we going to do with 179?
Yeah.
I guess my question is a lot of this sounds like it's years out. I mean, are we going to get to the point where we do it and then we're behind the curve again? Or
when you say this is years out, are you talking the actual development of the site, or are you talking?
I'm talking the eventual everything that's happening as we get to basically the 179 fix, for a better word.
In order for the entire area to be removed from urban molding, we need financial permit.
And we're not there. We don't have that. To speak of. You can tell me that.
There are always, that's a good observation, there are always options for the council to consider. But again, what we need to do is identify what improvement needs to be made to create capacity. As the area developers, so with that, we have to be able to say how much that is going to cost. And if this is going, we all know that this is going to be private-public partnership. So we'll look at what is the private sector willing to put on the table, and then where is the gap, and then how do we. In this case, the county fund that gap. And we know that the interchange improvement is state, that's a state facility. They put out 50, or they committed 50 million, but they're telling us that that would not be coming to fruition until 2022-25. Okay, so the question becomes, what do we do in the interim? What type of improvement needs to make as some of these projects move forward. The state, as you know, is not under concurrency, but we are. So we'll work with the private developers to see as they come online, what are they willing to do? And then what is the county going, how is the county going to come up with the public shape? We will be presenting options for the council to consider. And if there are no options, I'm not afraid to say if there are no options, I think we can say go now to the developers. You know, right now you can say that it is in a semi-moratorium in terms of the area. We want to come out of that. And there are things that used to happen. That's why everybody's struggling when it comes to infrastructure. And it makes it difficult when you have a facility that, you know, the state has to play. They have their own timeline and funding. So that's really what I want to, you know, to say. But we will have to come up with, they say, God, how do we close that gap?
Okay. Yeah. It's just, we'll say, mention comment that we received last time. This is a top priority for developing for the council, so bring this up to development. So we are trying to provide the council with gas.
So for the last development, due to the development agreement and the silent on finances, so does anyone have an idea what the financial commitment is to the county based upon that development?
The last one?
And yeah, the Kilby development. The development agreement was all signed on finances, so...
Well, it hasn't been signed and finalized yet. No. It hasn't been approved by council.
But does the financial impact assessment get done on that before the signing agreement, or how does that work?
Financial impact analysis. There isn't a whole lot of financial impact to do on that one because Killian already has trips. So there is no need to build capacity to accommodate that one.
This one, there is a need for the county to contribute.
The cost of everything that has to be done there is not anticipated to be met by the developer's contributions. As Oliver said, there is a gap.
Yeah. So when does the county hear the financial aspect of that?
Well, the council needs to make a decision in approving the DA in lifting urban holding that the critical links and intersections in the area of the interchange are reasonably funded, either complete or reasonably funded by the Transportation Improvement Program, the city TIP, or by the developer's agreement. Since these items are not all on the TIP, they're going to have to make a decision that the development agreement provides for reasonable funding, which means that they are going to be having to talk to some folks with financial information. They're going to have to make some choices based on that.
And this development adds, what, 600
Trips 657.
Yeah, the number of actual property
is 700.
So, as part of your assessment, you take that into account in looking at potential impact on school districts?
Yeah, so when it comes down to the school districts, for the school districts, during our capital facilities plan update in 2016, this area, actually in 2007, this area was added into the urban growth boundary. At that time, in 2007 and then in 2016, we talked to the schools, the capital facilities plan for their specific facilities came into place with our projected new homes that and their impacts on the schools. So the schools, while they've accommodated the growth in their capital facilities plan, that growth is in temporary, would have to be made up in burdens.
I will also add that we are bring in the school districts into the conversation. And what that means is letting them know what is happening. Some of these, even though you look at the number of homes, they likely are not going to be built. It's probably 2, 3, 4 years before. So that would enable the school districts to plan accordingly, if you will. In some cases, it will probably will be some of the, I'm not sure what the school boundaries look like, but I'm sure some of them will be in Richfield.
Yeah.
And some will be, if not all, some probably will be in Battleground. So I have to look at and then inform them accordingly. And Matt is correct. They will probably, depending on their capacity issues, quickly they respond by using portables.
Is that the property right there?
Yes.
Yeah, that's already in Battleground.
That's the zoning district.
No, but I meant the blue line is still the property, right?
No. The blue line is the zoning district.
Not Battleground?
That's all.
That's Battleground.
Yeah. 29th, I believe, is the
proposal would be in the Battleground school district. But
yes.
The blue is not.
The Killian one would be in the Richfield.
That's all my school.
But when the county goes to the comprehensive growth plan, I mean, the cities are involved, the school districts are involved. You know, when I was on the school board in Richfield, we looked at how fast is it going to grow. I mean, but then even with that, with all the planning that the school district has, it's the cart before the horse always, because. Yeah. The kids come first, then a little bit of funding with the impact fees happen.
Right.
It's enough to get some portables, and then once you get the portables, then you have to run the bond.
Right.
And if you've got a community, of, like in Richfield, a community of older people, they're just going to vote no forever and ever and ever until the cost gets so outrageous that finally get enough new people that now we're going to do it, and then my taxes go through.
I want to say on the Glenwood Warren campus.
But the school districts are very
large. There's at least
they better be
15.
They should
single portable.
Yes, that's our job.
Two 10 flexes. There's no more room for portables.
So I'm not done playing.
No. I was just thinking about how many portables are there.
So I'm not done playing. Schools and but as Matt indicated, during the planning process, we do. Work with the school district, letting them know the sizing of the urban growth boundary, anticipated growth. They use that in their capital facilities planning as well, and using that also to identify where they need new schools to be built, and we work with them in some cases to bring that site inside the urban growth boundary. For example, in the case of the center of the school district. And as the Planning Commission member mentioned here, it takes time, because, sometimes it's reactionary. Mm-hmm. You have to see the keys at your door, and then you begin to plan on how to accommodate them. So, and it takes time in some cases to build even brick and mortar for any school district, you go to bonding and so forth. But you also have the opportunity to adjust their CLP, depending on where they see growth coming from. And they can also ask, even though the impact fee doesn't pay for much, but when they adjust their CLP, they can also increase their school impact fees as well. They have an opportunity to do so.
But impact fees by portals, not built schools, correct?
No, it goes towards new
capital improvements.
Yeah, towards new capital improvement if they decide to buy for
$180,000 a portable.
Yeah.
So
$3 million for a 10-plex.
So
I know. It's just
like $180,000.
Sorry, I
decided. And they're worth $30 when you get rid of them. Sidetracked.
Sorry.
Well,
hey, do we currently know how much infrastructure in the county is not funded yet because of lack of funds?
So in 2016, we saw a need of around. In the 20-year plan, we have a deficit of $158 million.
Is that all?
So of that. But that's 20 year, right?
That's 20.
Yeah.
6 years. 6 years. There's no less.
20 years. It's only 800 grand a year.
No, no, no. They're trying. You know, like you don't know if you're going to get a grant or something. You know.
I know.
I was like the same.
I'm being facetious.
Okay.
Or no, 8 million.
Okay. Well.
Keep in mind also, when I say the county's deficit, I mean unincorporated Clark County, that applies to just our roads, not the interstate system, not interchanges, not state routes.
And anything within the reach of a city, you don't do the improvements on until they get annexed into the city, and then you let the city worry about it.
We do significant improvements in the
I'm teasing.
Sir. Alright. Any more questions?
Oh.
I have one what I would say just update. Last time I was here we indicated that we submitted a schedule to the council for consideration, and on that schedule we had November 8th joint hearing between the planning commission and the council on the federal dependent uses. So I just want to update you that the council is considering a different schedule. As soon as we know, we'll pass that on. So it's safe to say that they have not agreed yet. November 8th. So tomorrow is the last day to put legal out in the paper, and I'm not sure I'm going to do that. So I can tell you that for now, November 8th, go do something else.
Party like it's 1999.
So take it off your calendar. As I know more, I will let you know.
Okay.
Yeah. We had another option of December 6th. Who knows? When they let me know, I will pass that on.
I should also let you know that we got another order on compliance in the GMA appeal. Basically said exactly the same thing as the last one, did, except not quite as nicely. And so the growth board has deemed that the county is still out of compliance and invalid with the Richfield and La Center urban growth boundaries and the rural industrial land bank, and consequently Public Works is still unable to apply for a number of loans and grants. The growth board didn't say what they thought exactly that the county should do about this.
But wasn't that the problem before, that there was some ambiguity on what that was or what to do with it? Is it that kind of thing?
No,
listen, this is what you said before was there was what their rationale and reasoning on the center and Richfield was vague at best. I don't know. You said something about that.
Probably talked about the requirement to do a countywide or area-wide analysis. That's a little vague, but I guarantee you their decision is not vague. Their decision is that the county wrongly expanded those urban growth boundaries. Now, that's their decision. The issue is that immediately upon the urban growth boundary expansion, those two cities began a process to annex the expansion areas, and those areas were annexed before the growth board issued its decision. So now the growth board wants the county to do something about it. And the county does not have jurisdiction to make any land use planning decisions within the corporate limits of the city. I mean, we can go up and take stuff out of the Seattle urban growth boundary. They have not told us what we can do to come into compliance. Yeah, so it's not ambiguous. It's just...
No, I understand that they have their position, but
conundrum.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Is I couldn't remember you had said something then.
Yeah.
The solution to that was what do you want us to do?
The solution is to go to the Court of Appeals and argue about it there, which is what
we were doing.
And sometimes they win.
And they win some, but I mean, it's because
they say.
In this case, I've dealt a lot with them and I've heard a lot of cases with them, just like Chris has. And GMA makes it abundantly clear that the plans are valid on adoption. And you don't have to wait 6 years.
I was going to say, what do you do?
Wait 6 years to see if anybody else appeals or whatever. So you can do exactly what the city did and what the county did. The plan is valid until such time as somebody determines it's not. So then, Brooklyn Hearing Court doesn't like that. And so now the Brooklyn Hearing Court can't do anything. They can't force the county to undo the annexation. They can't force the city.
But apparently, right now,
but they
can
say we don't like it if we're going to. Yeah. And they're very good
I think the other thing that is. The other thing that is happening, if I may, is I don't know what would have happened if the properties that these two cities expanded into weren't had, wasn't designated as agriculture. I think it is safe to say that the conflict in conservation of ag, whether it's viable or not viable, I'm not going to go into that, but this issue of conservation of resource and expansion of the urban growth boundary to include resource-designated land, we have not been very, very successful, not only Clark County, but other counties. And I recall us having a similar issue in the case of Camus, and also Richfield. And here we are again. I think the growth board, as Randy was saying, they felt that, hey, yeah, the plan is valid upon adoption. I think their position is that any action of the city should have waited until.
That's what I didn't say,
But,
or the smart city said, I'm doing it now because I'm going to beat the growth board.
Yes.
Well, and they can do that for a while. At some point, perhaps the legislature will cut off their, but they haven't done that yet.
And to do that, they would have to basically you adopt a plan and then you wait 5 or 6 years to see if it's actually valid. Camus is a good example of it all.
It's not likely.
Green Mountain, large area, we just got that doing a 1,300 unit UD with the city development agreement. It's actually very similar to this. And it was challenged. It was annexed before the growth board made a decision. It was then challenged. The growth board didn't like it and said, you can't do this. And part of it, actually, part of appeal.
No, the growth board held that it was moot. Didn't you guys stipulate?
I got. The rest of the group, except for Cameron, that I got future wise to agree that because it's annexed, it was moot.
And the board held that. The Court of Appeals
is right.
Overruled the board. And we had to take it to the Supreme Court. I would not be surprised if this.
But again, our problem is grants. It stops our grants till it's dissolved. Or
grants and loans a variety of public works.
That's a problem.
Programs.
Have you guys thought about going and trying to file some sort of good or interlocutory appeal or something to the Superior Court to unlock that money and say, either get the court to make a more expedient decision than they might otherwise do. It
makes sense.
We did that for all of our county solid waste system when Tidewater, which I don't know if you guys know the garbage really well, Eric said Tidewater years ago, and waste management was the opponents for the other bidders for our county solid waste system. And the county awarded it to Tidewater. The county and I lost it at the tribal court level, and then we went directly to the Supreme Court.
We haven't been to Superior Court in this. We haven't been to the Court of Appeals. We are in the Supreme Court.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I think we're done with them.
Yeah, we're done with them.
We're done.
We're done. We're done. We're done.